I see the light everywhere I go. I see the light that'll lead me home. I can feel this holy fire burning in my soul.
Welcome to episode 8 of Missives from the Underground. I am Dee Dee. I go by Dust Daughter on Twitter. And I'm joined by Maria, who goes by @_Roxy_ on Twitter. And we're here to talk about episode 9 of season 2 of Underground, called Citizen. The episode opens with Cato looking out of the window of George's boarding house. He nods to some of the boarders and walks out of the room. He slides down a ladder and finds Georgia putting on makeup in a room downstairs. And he stares for a minute. So I wondered there, has he figured out that she's passing? Has he always known? What was up with that stare? So basically, Cato's patting the walls and rifling through papers. He's casing the joint, looking for intel to find Harriet Tubman. And he finds a small door in the wall and smiles. And you just know that he's going to use that later. Possibly to go back and forth between the boarding house and Patty Cannon's place, which is really his place. He passes by Elizabeth with a smile and a nod and goes into another room, which we find out is actually George's office. He goes through the papers on her desk and then runs into Harriet. She's sweeping up in George's office and says that she tidies up for Miss Georgia from time to time. When Cato prompts for her name, she gives him her birth name, Minty. Cato finds Georgia in the kitchen just like Minty told him she would be. He overhears a snippet of the conversation or the argument between Georgia and Elizabeth. Georgia adds that Rosalie will return by week's end, and he closes the door then. Cato then meets with Patty Cannon, who is getting impatient with all these Negroes resting comfortably in safe houses. Only she doesn't say Negroes. Cato says he's working on something and needs more time. He says that he saw someone who resembled Harriet's description, but she was sweeping floors. Patty dismisses that intel since she doubts that the most notorious slave stealer would sweep anybody's floors. And that's why Patty Cannon is not going to catch Harriet, because Patty thinks she's smart, but she really isn't. She gives Cato 3 days. Cato says that he's right where he wants to be, and he's staying in that house until we get what we need. Then he takes a knife and cuts his wrists. And it's really graphic and really, and the wounds look pretty deep. And he lost a fair bit of blood, and it was really, really gross, and could have used a trigger warning for that. In the next scene, Cato and Elizabeth talk while she tends his wounds. They talk about how more than the anger and sadness, the real constant is fear. And it's only got two places to go, in or out. Kato tells her, to become the monster that came to eat you. And I'm wondering, like, of all the people that have been trying to advise her, she's gotten advice from Georgia. She's even gotten advice from Harriet Tubman. Rosalie has probably given her some advice. But the person that she ends up listening to is Cato. Go figure. Later that night, Cato sneaks out of the room where all of the runaways are sleeping, and he sees Elizabeth walk out of the boarding house with a gun, a lantern, and some kerosene out of the that we saw Georgia filling up earlier. Cato follows Elizabeth and finds a farmhouse on fire, and a boy crying out for and he hears a boy crying out for his father. And Elizabeth is passed out on the ground. In the next scene, he's bathing in a lake with some of Patty's men, and Patty herself, ride up on horses. And he just walks out of the water, and you can see Patty checking him out because she's gross, and I hate her, and I'm waiting for her to die. But Cato stomps out of the water and says, "We got 2 days." Then the point of view switches from Cato to Elizabeth, and we go back to the moment that Cato passes by her in the boarding house earlier that morning. After Cato passes by, Elizabeth greets a new boarder. She notices the scars on his hand, and recognizes him as one of the men that were in that proto-clan. A group that tied her up and threatened her and cut her. She hears that ringing in her ears again, and she reaches for a gun in the drawer next to her. The guy gives her a name for the ledger, gives her the name John Hawks. He says that her husband got what he deserved, and she slaps him and tells him to leave. Then we hear the rest of the argument with Georgia, but we hear it in context this time. Elizabeth is angry and asks why Georgia isn't. Georgia tells her, "We don't need more attention on this house." She tells Elizabeth to let it go. Elizabeth tells Georgia what that man did to her, and Georgia notes that Elizabeth is still alive, but had it been her instead of Elizabeth, it would have been much worse. Georgia says that she passes because a sense of safety transforms the spirit. Georgia thinks it has Elizabeth thinking she's invincible. Elizabeth has the nerve to say that's not fair. I kind of think it is. Georgia's not sure. She says maybe it's maybe not. But retaliation threatens the safety of all the runaways in the house, and that has to be the priority. But we can see that Elizabeth is not really listening to Georgia. She's listening to Cato. And speaking of, Elizabeth finds Cato after he cut himself. And they have that conversation again about fear and monsters. And this time we can hear that ringing sound that Elizabeth tends to hear throughout their convo. So Elizabeth waits for the man that came by the boarding house to leave his home on a horse before she lights his place on fire. She sees a boy running out, crying out for his pa, and Elizabeth goes into the burning house, I guess thinking she's going to save the boy, but she inhales too much smoke and passes out. Back at the boarding house, Georgia says that this is what she was afraid of, that innocent people would get hurt. They've taken the boy in, and they're caring for him. Georgia tells Elizabeth that she's crossing a line that she can't come back from. And Elizabeth says only fear, making everyone feel that fear, will change anything in this country. Georgia says if Elizabeth really believes that, then she's dangerous, and she needs to leave her house. So I was like, yes! Should have been kicked her out.
Okay, so Elizabeth accuses Georgia of wanting to ignore the threat, which, once again, how could Georgia ever do that? Her entire life is, you know, constantly under white threat as a black woman. But anyway, Georgia points out Rosalie and her family are coming back, and this is the part that Cato overhears earlier, and she doesn't want any attention drawn to the house. Elizabeth says she doesn't understand because Georgia handed her a gun, which was Georgia's first mistake, if we're being honest. And Georgia says to defend yourself, which is kind of hilarious because Elizabeth's never really used it to defend herself. She's always trying to shoot people.
Yeah.
And we also, while they're having this conversation, we see Georgia filling lamps with oil, the same canister we later see Elizabeth sneaking out with.
Oh my god.
And so Elizabeth is upset because the man who came up to her was the one who kidnapped her, of course. And Georgia says she has her sympathies and points out that Elizabeth came back alive, that had it been her, probably not so much. And she says she tries to pass as white because a sense of safety transforms the spirit. Although the very idea of thinking of trying to pass as white seems very stressful to me. You know, already as a black woman, I wouldn't feel safe. Then a black woman, you know, trying to pass as white and hoping nobody finds out just seems like so much stress.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she calls
and it
out.
Sure had.
Go ahead, sorry.
It's already been stressful for her. Wow. As we've seen.
And now she got to deal with Elizabeth. You know, and I watched this episode twice. And the first time, I guess I kind of half watched it because I remember thinking, oh, Elizabeth, you know, coming up, she's changing. She's going to be on the... Mm-mm. The second watch, I was like, oh, no. Never mind.
Both watches, I was like, I was right. I was right to be hard on her.
No, yeah,
no,
you were not wrong. So she also calls out Elizabeth's privilege, you know, because Elizabeth, she says, you know, the sense of safety is making you feel like you're invincible. And Georgia says she can't have Elizabeth endangering the threatening the safety of the runaways. And that their safety has to be the top priority. Which, yeah, I agree. Also, Georgia's. So you can't really just slap white men. Sorry, Elizabeth.
It's not your house.
Yeah.
She's acting like that's her...
Like, we're sorry. We know what happened to you is horrible. And he is a total jerk. But you can't endanger everybody else. You gotta think more outside of yourself. So we rewind further to back when Elizabeth found Cato bleeding out in the cellar. And we go back to the mending and tending scene. And it's this time, you know, from Elizabeth's side. And we know this because there is this whistling sound that permeates the scene as the lines are repeated with more tension. And it's just, I can't stand that sound. Like, it was hard for me to watch it.
But she's been hearing it ever since John got shot. So
I guess Elizabeth has tinnitus.
Maybe.
So we go through that scene, and Cato talks about becoming the monster that came to eat you, and we flash forward to the white troll as he smokes on his porch. And Elizabeth is watching him from the woods as he rides away on his horse, probably to go terrify some more brown folk, no doubt. And the whistling is still going on. It's really on my nerves. And later, in just a split second later, we see the shack is engulfed in flames because Elizabeth has that canister of oil. And we see the young boy running from the woods towards the shack, screaming for his father. And Elizabeth sees him go in, and she goes in after to rescue him. But she almost immediately passes out.
I'm like, this chick did not think at all.
Not at all. Not at all.
No forethought.
Right.
So
it's like, they're probably gonna know it's you. They're probably gonna come looking for you, and they're gonna find Georgia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When they retaliate, it's going to end up hurting everybody but you, probably.
Right. So she wakes up to find herself in an abandoned wagon. And then we see them at the hospital. The boy's at the hospital. He's all wounded and bandaged and burnt. And Georgia says to Elizabeth that she was afraid of this, that of innocent people getting hurt. And Elizabeth is now the wokest of the woke and the most radical. Spits John Brown to Georgia, saying, "We're all complicit as long as there's slavery in this country." And Elizabeth says, "The first thing I agree with ever about the little boy," she says, "you know, he's his father's son. He was raised to believe that owning people is his birthright." And this is where Georgia and I kind of diverge. She says, "Well, he could have been different." And I'm like, "Sure, maybe. He may still be different, but the odds are not in your optimistic favor. Like, not at all. Considering who his father even is, right? It's not like his father was even just like some middle-of-the-road milquetoast abolitionist, you know?
He's part of the proto-clan, so...
Exactly. And she says to Georgia, you know, a sense of safety... if a sense of safety transforms the spirit, then it reasons that the counterpart should do the same. She says, love or hope is not what's going to end this fight. It's fear, total and unforgiving. That's the only thing that moves us. And I really feel like she's saying white people. And she says, until we all feel it, nothing is going to change. Which I agree.
I don't know. When she said that, I was thinking about this Twitter thread from N.K. Jemisin. Mm-hmm. She wrote it Thursday after the Republicans voted to take health care away from millions of Americans. Mm-hmm. And her theory was basically that all of this bullshit that the Republicans are raining down. Mm-hmm. On us stems from, you know, that vote for Cheeto Head that came from unfounded fear from white folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read that.
8 years of Obama made them feel like, made them feel fear that something was going to get taken away from them. Mm-hmm. When inequality gets flattened, even the littlest bit, they start to get fearful. Mm-hmm. And that's what led to this vote for this evil SOB that's in office now.
Oh, yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I think she's saying way more fearful, like Civil War fearful.
I just find it funny that Elizabeth is preaching about complicity of slavery to a former slave.
Okay.
Like, Georgia is...
It seems to be lost.
A freed woman that's passing.
Right. That Georgia had been a slave at one point. That Georgia is still a black woman in this country. It seems like the only person I guess she's passing to is Elizabeth, because Elizabeth just seems to ignore all of this. Constantly. Even after... Even after Georgia tells her. More than once.
Elizabeth is basically telling Georgia things that Georgia already knows. And I don't know. I've been over it, but go ahead.
Love and hope has its place, don't get me wrong. But I just don't believe in. I mean, you know, after what it took to get some emancipation, I don't think love and hope was gonna take it all down by itself.
Yeah.
We're both. So Georgia says to her, you know, if that's what you truly believe, you're dangerous. And she kicks Elizabeth out the house. And I understand why Georgia does this, but I also kind of agree with Elizabeth here.
I was just happy. I was like, yes, finally!
Doesn't mean she's her ass out. No, she's still going to be there. You got to have your white liberal abolitionist.
My God, why? We don't need her. We have Georgia. An actual, factual black person. Anyway, go ahead.
So we go back to Georgia and Minty. And Minty tells Georgia she doesn't trust Cato. And to keep an eye on him, because Minty's about to go off on another journey here. And Georgia is concerned about Minty making this run by herself. And she says she's never alone because she has God. You know. And we get a couple scenes of Minty with her horse, which are just so cute. I like
mm-hmm. her. She also told Georgia, to keep an eye on Cato. Because mm-hmm. his answers come too easy from his mouth.
Right.
And I'm like, tell him, Harriet. Mm-hmm. Tell him.
And we see her taking down wanted posters for escaped slaves on the way. We see her doing her hair. We see her dodging patrols. And finally she finds an empty church and she goes to pray. And she says she feels she may be becoming prideful. And how she'd rather deal in actions than in talk, but they keep telling her she needs to tell her story. Frederick and Douglass do. And she can't deny, the actual freedom that money can buy, that the money they raise from her talks. She also says she thinks Frederick and Douglass are educated but foolish, thinking one could teach courage, that she's not sure that she's the best to teach it, that maybe she is better doing what she does know how to do alone, and doesn't want to be something she isn't, General Tubman. She's not too sure she's ready for that kind of mantle. She's not sure she's meant to lead.
I'm like, does Harriet Tubman have imposter syndrome? Like, what's going on?
Imposter syndrome, a crisis of confidence, yes. Definitely.
Wow.
Which, I mean, you can imagine, she is human. You know,
yes,
we have her built up in our mind, but she's human, and that she did a lot, and to do all that, like, I can imagine at some point she had to have a little doubt about herself.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that she spies a lantern in a window at a safe house. So she knocks, and Noah answers the door, which kind of surprised me because I felt like that was unsafe, but I understand the drama. let's see. But now we move on to Rosalie. So this is the segue between Minty, Georgia, and Elizabeth to Rosalie, Noah, and James. So Rosalie, in a past scene, is arguing with Eleanor, who is a white woman who owns the house they're in. And she's arguing with her to let them stay at her house, pointing out no one will think that they ran off next door instead of going north. Eleanor is not buying it, but Noah points out that Eleanor looks like she could use the money, okay, that she would get from hiding them. And Eleanor can't deny this, so she relents, but Cora, you know, is fretting. She's afraid, of course. And the tension between Noah and Rose is there. Like, it's palpable. And yeah, they're just not, there's so many people around, they can't get a moment alone to discuss what's been happening with her being pregnant and not telling him. So the next scene is them waking up to gunshots, and Cora runs in screaming, but she's shot in the back. And Rose and Noah and James are all awake, but they have to be silent so they won't be caught. And she sees them, and they can't even say anything to her. And all we see is her being dragged out by the men who are chasing her. And you can hear them say that they'll get money no matter if she's dead or alive, so it doesn't matter to them.
Savages.
Yeah. So next we see Noah and James and Rose all laying very still and quiet in a wagon, being hidden in a wagon. And they're all discussing their future, and maybe James will get to go to school. And he's like, well, I was being taught how to read on the plantation. And Noah tells him that was a lie. That's not true freedom. Which, poor James.
Yeah.
He's a kid. He's being manipulated in so many ways that he won't even realize so much later.
Yeah, but Noah told them that, you know, he gets to be his own master now, and that means, you know, deciding what choices you're going to make, because every choice has consequences. Mm-hmm. And you can see him shooting that look at Rosalie.
Okay. Rosalie is not trying to catch his eye.
Nope.
So they finally get back. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just like, this scene was great.
Yeah.
The scene coming up is great.
Okay, so Noah and Harriet are discussing. They're talking. They're back at the safe house, I guess. And she's asking him questions. And it comes out that Noah says he doesn't believe in God. And she keeps asking him, how did he think he could escape? How did he think he could make it? How did he think he could do this, do that? Until Noah just finally says that he believed he could. And it's at that point that Harriet says she needs men like him for her army. So I guess she's decided to take on that mantle of General Tubman. And he is her first recruit. And then later, Noah and Rose finally get to talk. They finally get to be alone in a room. And Rose starts to try to apologize, and Noah explodes at her, of course, about how he feels betrayed and how he felt afraid for their child once he found out. And Rose pleads that she had no choice, that she had to have her brother back, that she knew they could do it together. And Noah correctly points out that they did do it together, because not knowing about the baby is not doing it together. And putting the baby in danger in harm's way, he's upset, you know, that she tricked him. And then he finally just says, Rose, you treated me just like a slave. You removed my choice. You just like your father.
Damn, that was... Ugh. I mean, it was all true, but it was cold as shit.
That cut me deep.
Yeah. To the bone.
Devastating, of course. Yeah. I was like, oh, God.
But okay, for a second there in that scene with Noah and Harriet, mm-hmm. I was shipping it.
What?
I was shipping it.
I was not.
I was like,
I did not even think of it.
Rose acting up. He can get replaced. Oh, anyway, sorry.
What's that TLC song? Hotel, Motel, Holiday.
Holiday
is. I said, if your man starts acting up, bitch, and take then, his friend.
Hey.
Oh, my goodness.
We ain't shit. Okay.
No. For the last few scenes here, we're with Daniel, and I think this is the longest we've ever been with him. And it's Daniel and his daughter, and they're hiding away from what's happening in the foreground, which we don't really get to see too much of. And she's telling him what it is that's happening. What's happening is, I guess, some of the enslaved folks they found being taught how to read are being sold away from their family. And we don't really see them much, but we hear their screaming and their crying, and we hear the crack of the whip, and it's still very affecting. And his daughter worries if they would be sold away from each other, and he says that he's not going to let it happen. And he's not sure what he's going to do, but he's not going to let it happen. She says to him that Sojourner Truth will run. And later we see Daniel with his wife, and he's talking about, you know, trying to find John Brown and run away. And she's trying to persuade him to stay because she's scared they're going to do something to the kids if he runs. And he says, freedom has always been the only answer. And she asks him, what can she do? How can she help? And he says, love me, pray for me, and be ready in case I fail. And so we go to the next morning where he gets on the wagon that's going to take him to whatever plantation he's working on today, where he overhears these white men talking about Ripley. So he goes to them and he asks them, which one of you can point me in the direction of Ripley? And of course they all point, which I thought was weird, because Daniel's blind, but okay.
Yes.
Or maybe he's just seeing impaired, I'm not sure.
Yeah, because throughout the rest of his scenes, the camera is, like, it's fuzzy.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we're supposed to be seeing
it. But it's not. Yeah.
Because it seems really good for how bad his eyes look.
Mm-hmm. So like the irises look burned out. They're almost like milky white or almost bluish.
Blue, like, it's not right. So we see him on a market or a main street, and he's just walking down. You can hear everybody's conversations, and he's stopped by a white man with a badge demanding his papers, his freedom papers, and he gives him his working papers. And the man says, you know, you're miles away from where you're supposed to be. And he shows him his bag, which he says is broken because he broke it. And he asks for the nearest cobbler.
Oh, and just one thing. He also says that he's on loan to a university.
Yeah.
And it just made me think about how so many colleges and universities mm-hmm. have been built on slave labor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's lots of universities that are having to change their names or change the names of parts of their schools on their campus
mm-hmm.
To get rid of the slave owners' names for them.
Getting rid of statues commemorating the Confederacy.
I mean, Georgetown University was built on slave labor, and they're trying to find ways to provide some sort of half-assed reparations for it. But that little aside kind of struck me.
And you recall the story just not too long ago. I think it was Yale. This guy. A guy who was working there took a brick and smashed one of the windows because it depicted a scene of enslaved people.
Hmm.
And they were going to charge him with something, but I think they ended up dropping that because, well, can you blame him?
No. Yeah.
Having to work and see that every day. Are you kidding me? Come on. So Daniel walks into a cobbler shop. And he's making conversation with the man who's working there. And he mentions an article he read before his accident that talked about six cobbler shops in Ripley and how most places only had, you know, two or maybe three. And he mentions that the article also said that some of those shops made shoes for runaways. And he's fishing for an ally here. And it doesn't seem to be going too well, so he just comes right out with it. And he says, I'm looking for John Brown. And the cobbler denies any knowledge, saying he doesn't get involved in politics.
Mm-hmm. How nice for you.
I know. Slavery is just a political notion for you. Like, it's something you can choose not to be involved in.
Wish we could have.
Oh, it's just kind of like a stunning idea to me. And so Daniel turns to leave, but as he's about to reach for the door, the cobbler stops him. And then we go to the next scene, so we don't know what the cobbler wants yet. So in the last scene, we see Elizabeth bringing down her bags, and she's moving out of the house. And she sees a man at the front desk, and she says, "Excuse me, sir, can I help you?" And the camera turns, and we see it's Daniel. No, no, I agree.
I was like, he made it, he made it. But then I remembered Cato's still there. He about to fuck some Cato, shit up.
He's still there, he is.
Oh, Lord. But did you see the, did you see the sneak peek for next week, or... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw it on YouTube.
Oh, you did? Oh, I'm concerned for Rosalie's mom, Ernestine, with that guy, because she doesn't know that Rosalie is the one that killed his son.
Yeah, she maybe she found out in that scene, and that's why she's running. I don't know. I'm worried that the show's gonna end the moment Rosalie's water breaks. Mm-hmm. And I'm not gonna know if the baby was birthed okay or if Rosalie is safe. I'm like, that, I mean, it's some underground shit to do, to just fade to black right after she starts going into labor. I just don't do it, Misha. I'm saying it now. Don't do it. But it looks like Noah's giving Elizabeth a gun, Lord. Will somebody stop giving that white woman guns?
Man, oh my gosh.
But Noah's giving everybody guns, and they fighting. If Patty Cannon don't die next episode, I don't know what I'm going to do.
I don't think she's going to die next episode, I have to say.
Oh, keep hope alive. What happened to keep hope alive?
I'm a pessimist.
I don't have any predictions that are good, but all I know is I hope that Rosalie gets to give birth in a safe place, but I doubt it. I just want...
She's giving birth in the safe house.
Oh, okay.
Which is not necessarily the safe space because, you know, Cato.
Yeah. And I just need Patty Cannon to die horribly.
Yeah. Or by Harriet's hand.
Or just die while she walks, while she watches Harriet walk on by.
I would really love a death where she's just forgotten.
That would be that'd be great.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll keep it true to history and just
have her hung.
String her up. Yeah.
You'll see.
Birdman hand rub. Mm-hmm.
There's so many ways to go.
Let's try them all. Let's try them all and mix them up. Because that's the kind of violence I likes. Oh, gosh. So, that's the end of our episode. Let us know what you think. of the show Underground and of our show Missives from the Underground. You can tweet us at Black Girl Squeak. You can also tweet us individually. Maria is at underscore Roxy underscore, and I am at Dust Daughter. You can also email us at blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. And if you like the show and the other shows on our network, please consider contributing at patreon.com/blackgirlsquee. So until next time, bye.
Yeah!
I see the light everywhere I go. I see the light that'll lead me home. Can feel this holy fire burning in my soul.